for the board independently to do this unless the director makes a recommendation based on a bureau determination of some factor. So if I'm reading that correctly, and I'll ask Sue when she comes back, I do believe that gives you a different level of protection than the board just having independently the right to come to that judgment.
I think that's true. I think the problem is that the director is heavily influenced by people on the board, as he should be. If you get four company representatives from four industries that say we need to cap limousine or pedicab permits, even people in the limousine industry that maybe aren't doing as well as others,
okay.
The director's going to bring it up.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Bonnie Fortune, and I'm from Lucky Limousine and Town Car Services here in Portland, Oregon. I sent a letter that had detailed information of my concerns to you yesterday. I would like to state that adding limousines, SUVs, and pedicabs to the private for hire regulations with the ability of the board to put caps on the number of vehicles a company can have in its fleet restricts free trade. Change is chaotic but unavoidable. Privately owned companies need to make the adjustments to the services they provide, not regulate out competition. Competition is healthy. Prearranged services are being requested more now than ever. Obviously, this has reduced the number of on-demand services required. Not allowing a company to adjust its fleets to the changes their clients desire is unhealthy for the company as well as for the city. Prearranged services are vital to the health of the city, as are on-demand services. The only thing that should be changed in the current amendment to add representatives from the limousine and pedicab industries before any regulations be applied to them.
Thank you.
Good morning. Jeff Hampton, president of the Oregon Lodging Association, executive director of Tri-County Lodging. And I'm here on behalf of the Tri-County Lodging Association and our members providing lodging here in the city of Portland. I'm here specifically to address the private for hire city code 1640-460. The lodging industry in Portland and around the state relies on transportation services that are efficient, clean, safe, and readily available for guests, often on a very short notice. We believe that visitors to Portland and hotel guests should have the opportunity to choose their preferred transportation, including taxicabs, pedicabs, limousines, town cars, or executive sedans. We also believe it's appropriate for the city to establish reasonable standards for vehicle safety, driver qualifications, and rate in the interest of the general public, traveling public. We support the City of Portland and Council in establishing and regulating reasonable and fair standards. It is not private industry that should be required to do so. We do not believe it's necessary for the city to place restrictions on companies who wish to be considered on-demand and available when a guest contacts any company for service or directs hotel staff to do so on their behalf. We do not support any on-demand license fee or penalty for responding to a guest request. And certainly within 1640-460 sub G, which was just added last week, as I understand it, there is a provision that makes a hotel liable with a civil penalty of $500 for each occurrence in which a hotel allows a hotel guest to obtain limousine or executive sedan transportation services without the required one-hour reservation. This subsection permits a limousine or executive sedan to provide their service to a guest with no civil penalty if the written contract exists, and that does include the $2,500 fee. The hotel industry should not be asked to regulate the use of transportation or face penalties for allowing guests. We would ask that subsection G, which places the $500 civil penalty on the lodging industry, be removed from the code.
So let me just speak to that. We're not asking you to regulate the industry. We're asking you to comply with the law. And there are plenty of examples the staff can share with you where employees of the members that you represent regularly, improperly, and against the law allow clients to use improperly town car services in place of cabs. And that has to and you need to communicate to your members that has to stop.
Absolutely agree with you, President Leonard and Commissioners. We are not in support of any industry member violating law as it currently exists or future. I guess I'd be on the record to say that immediately. If a guest contacts a company or directs a hotel to do so, by requiring the hotel to ensure that there's a written contract in place with the city, It puts the hotel in the position of having to somehow know which companies do have valid contracts and which don't.
If I could just address that, that's a separate issue,
and I just want to be real clear. We're very focused on what the problem is here, and it is if your members make it clear to their employees we will not tolerate you taking any gratuity from a town car company or a limousine service to offer a ride to them improperly in place of a cab, or you will be terminated. This fine will never be levied.
And I actually, listening to your comments, sir, in looking at G as currently drafted, a hotel employee would have to have knowledge of the request. So the extent to which a someone who's staying in the hotel independently circumvents this process, I don't think that this current provision would impose liability on the hospital, excuse me, on the hotel without knowledge. The hotel employee would have to allow this to happen, and allowing means they must have some knowledge. If someone circumvents that, I don't think your industry is being asked to regulate that.
President Leonard and commissioners, Commissioner Fish, you're correct that hotels, according to sub G, allow it is part of the provision here. But again, I guess I would go back to if a hotel guest asks a hotel staff member to request town car service. I don't know how the hotel staff would necessarily know whether or not that town car company had a valid license, had paid the fee, whatever amount of fee that might be, other than to go to the driver and ask to see some sort of certification. And so in that regard, I don't know
that's
how
a,
we would do
that's
that.
Another point, and frankly, I think that's an important clarification point, because there's nothing that would prevent the Bureau of Licenses from furnishing online a list of all companies that have paid the fee.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be available on a regular basis.
And again, President Leonard and commissioners, that then adds another level of the hotel having to verify that a company has that, whether it's online or for a phone call, whatever it might be. But that is asking the hotel property to verify the license that's on file.
Thank you. Sue?
The next three will be Mustafa Makubi, Gary Coe, Casey Martell. They'll be followed by Eric Benson, Sarah Amado, Carl Johnson.
Good morning. Please state your first, last name, and you have 2 minutes.
Mustafa Mabkuri. I'm the owner, operator of MM Global Limousine and the president of the new formed Town Car Limousine Association. Gentlemen, I'm not going to bore you with my stories. All I'm going to ask this council is to look into this board that's doing the laws, the same board that never regulated a limo to carry our kids to the proms until I came to this town and started challenging them. Then they rewrite the laws. I have a city attorney on Ann Yeager's report admit that the rules were biased towards the cabs. So I'm asking this council to please take that power away from the board and have your staffs, as I spoke to each one of your staffs, except Commissioner Leonard, because we know where he stands, okay, to take a look at this properly, okay? They're putting rules on the cabs that no other city is not doing. Every city's got the same rules on their cabs. So why should the town car on the limousine business should be punished for whatever rules is on the cabs, okay? And this board is biased with no knowledge of the industry, to the point where the word livery, which includes limousines, town cars, and SUVs, they don't even believe in it. They only believe in regulating town cars because they constitute a competition to the cabs. I'm asking this council to have your staffs really look at this new rules with other cities with the rules nationwide. I'm begging you to look at that. The way the rules are written right now is to put us out of business for whatever interest. And I'm begging you to really, please, have your staff look at this deeply and look into the board that's making these rules. Unless you want us out of business. Too many town cars will go out of business the way the rules are written right now. The contract thing, because they knew. I looked at the rules, and I have 25 experience in New York and Atlantic City. I looked at the rules, and I knew to beat these rules is to get the contracts with the hotels. They turn around and amend the last amendment without mentioning it in the workshops that we did in the rewrite of the laws. That's being sneaky.
Thank you.
Oh.
Good morning. Gary Coe, Pacific Cascade Town Car. We operate 14 town cars, and we are one of the companies that has the on-demand contract with the city, with the Port of Portland to serve the airport. Commissioner Saltzman, I commend you for taking a common sense approach towards the last minute, I guess I would call it a holdup of the town car companies for on-demand contracts. Last year, you passed the Small Business Bill of Rights, and one of the items in the Bill of Rights is establish and maintain fair system of taxation and fees that encourage small businesses to start, survive, grow, and remain in Portland. I felt like the $2,500 for the first vehicle and $1,000 for each additional vehicle was truly outrageous. And so that's the only clause that I speak to. I can be supportive of the $1,000 fee for per contract. I don't know that we'll establish contracts with hotels, but at least it gives us that option at a fair rate. So thank you for bringing that up. I'd also like to say, in the few minutes remaining, I commend the Bureau for their open meetings and taking all facets into consideration. We had a lot of good input from all parties, and I think it was a very fair system, and I'm a little outraged at this last-minute change that showed up last week. I didn't come here last week because I was in agreement with everything in the proposal, and then I found out about this, and I'm upset.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you very much for allowing me to come here and speak about pedicabs. My name is Casey Bartel. I own Portland Rose Petals Pedicab, and I've thoroughly enjoyed running my business for the last 7 years and expanding now to include more pedicabs and being able to rent my cabs out to other drivers and share the awesome experience it is to be a pedicab driver here in this beautiful city. And I would like to say that I'm fully behind the Commissioner Saltzman's Second Amendment in creating an ad hoc committee that includes representation from all the pedicab companies and people that work with the city, the police department, and the BTA, and the Private for Hire Transportation Board. I think that we are included in the Private for Hire Transportation, I think that we can all work together in creating new regulations here for pedicabs, something that I think that is needed. The insurance requirements, I believe, are important too. I believe that we all do have liability insurance as much as we can get. When I first started, there were no companies offered me insurance, and so I have just gone on liability insurance that is included in my homeowner's insurance. So I look forward to working with everyone to create these new regulations and making this business more legitimate and hopefully making it more, allowing more people in the city to use this as another option of transportation around town. And I look forward to working with the taxi cab companies, too. Over the years, I've had a great experience with them, and I look forward to working with them continually. And then I believe we take the short trips that some of them would rather not take, and some of them do like to take those short trips, too, so we don't want to compete with anybody, and we would hope to maybe include our own spot down at the train station so that we're not stepping on each other's toes down there.
Thank you.
So just to clarify, with Commissioner Saltzman's amendment, you're comfortable with the regulations as proposed?
Well, the regulations as proposed now don't quite fit with pedicabs, so it's something that we need to work on, and with the creation of an ad hoc committee, I believe we can all come to regulations that work for everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sue, next three.
Next three, Eric Benson, Sarn Amado, Carl Johnson. They'll be followed by Ray Miles, Sinclair Raza, and Tracy Marks.
Everybody up here and seated. Welcome, gentlemen. Please state your first and last names for the record, and you each have 2 minutes.
My name is Eric Benson, owner-operator in Sal Limousine. I had a chance to talk. I tried getting a hold of the mayor this last week. Had a chance to talk with his public advocate and had a nice conversation. It was enjoyable. And a few things that we discussed, and she said I should bring back up and clarify. Under these new amendments, I'm sure they've worked hard. I don't doubt that. But they are going on somewhat uneducated in the field of the limousines. I sat in the meetings over there on Columbia when they were pushing this through. They did the vote. They said, yeah, we're going to vote on it, though it's ridiculed with loopholes we've got to iron out. To have something in front of council is not even close to being ironed out is absurd. They're asking you guys to bring in all this knowledge and vote on it when they've been working on it for 8 months. I don't expect five people to understand it. For example, I have two cars that will classify or will be categorized under a lot of these new amendments. The rest of mine aren't. And as I talked with the public advocate, my concern more is to a layman, a limousine is a limousine. And when you're over the 14 passengers, you're governed by the state under a CDL driver's license. And they said, well, we're not going to govern that. My concern is people are paying a lot of money to be in a limousine. And when I'm detained because somebody who isn't informed on the size of a limousine, just because it stretches how long it is doesn't mean that's how many people it carries. And so to be detained and my customers to be detained, they're going to be looking at me thinking I'm not permitted properly if I'm in one of my, you know, larger SUVs, and then they're going to want money back. And if I'm cited, then I'm down in court to fight it to prove I'm right. All this stuff takes time and money out of my wallet, out of my day. And like I told the advocate, I'm going to be down on City Hall steps looking for a paycheck to replace this when I'm stopped for something I'm really not doing wrong.
Great. Thank you. Sir?
Hi. My name is Sar Amadou. I've been a taxi cab driver for different companies in the city, for Broadway Cab and for Green Cab, maybe both for 3 to 2 years. Today, I'm a town car driver and share the job with the limousines in style and cascade and all so on. So for me, being an ex-cab taxi cab driver and being a town car driver, I don't see any such rivalries or fight on my own perspective of seeing the business around. And meanwhile, also, this new amendment concerning the contracts over to 2,500 should be maybe lowered for the small companies that are just still growing day by day, or as just me, being an ex-cab driver and just growing and pushing to make more business on my side, that maybe should be left at $1,000. I mean, regardless, it's up to your own regulation, but regardless of experience and just opening. Meanwhile, for the other cases, we should probably stretch out a little bit for the limousines and the town car to have a little bit more access towards certain other centers, as the Greyhound or as the train station. As they say that the pedicab are already hanging around the Rose Quarter. We've seen them during the NBA playoffs. We don't let the public and the community have the choice to probably have a town car at the train station or at the Greyhound or at the Rose Quarter. We don't have a stand, kind of, what I'm trying to say. Doesn't mean that we're trying to occur or overcompete with the taxi cabs, but we're just trying to leave the choice to the client. Basically, that's the rest have been already said by my other colleagues and friends. So
that's why I decided. Thank you. Sir?
Hi, my name is Carl Johnson. I'm the owner of Interstate Limousine. I am a Washington-based company with Washington insurance and a Washington driver's license, Washington UBI number, inspected by the Washington State Patrol. The insurance in Washington is significantly higher than it is in Washington. Low-end vehicle is $1.5 million. High-end is $5 million. I might be more than that for certain vehicles. And the inspection of the vehicles is actually more stringent with the Washington State Patrol than in the packet that was proposed by the board. Also, I wanted to talk a little bit about reciprocal law, you know, pertaining to a different state. Reciprocal law, and this is kind of what I looked up, is a two-way agreement requiring both states to recognize each other's permits. Generally, a state will agree to reciprocity if the states are geographically close to each other and have similarities. So, you know, me being from Washington and a Washington-based company, I bring people from outside, Gresham, mainly Washington, and they come in here, they spend money. And the taxi cab companies and the town car companies benefit from that because we bring them in the city, we drop them off at a club, and then they don't want to spend the money for the limousine half the time because of the economy. So they're driven around by taxi cabs, town cars, and pedicabs. So we are good for business. You know, we are regulated by town cars and taxi cabs, but nobody wants to ask the restaurants or nightclubs if they like our work. And a perfect example of the reciprocal law is Washington and Oregon is if you go to Washington with your Oregon driver's license, you don't pay sales tax. So that's just an example of cooperation between two states.
Great. Thank you.
The next three are Ray Miles, Sinclair Raza, Tracy Marks, and then the last two will be Ryan Hoshkin and Tomas Bernal.
Great. Thank you. Good morning. Get everybody up here. Welcome. You each have 2 minutes. Please state your first name and last. Go ahead.
My name is Ray Miles with Broadway Cab and Sassy's Cab Companies. First, I just want to thank you for your thoughtful deliberation on this topic. Sometimes it does feel like I'm the only one that cares about this stuff, and so this will go a long way for me. So, second, regarding Commissioner Leonard's amendment last week, I did have a chance to look it over, and I have to commend your office. It's the first amendment of this type that hasn't just completely eaten at my heart or something. So I do kind of reluctantly support it. I hope this is perceived as a privilege for the hotels and the town car companies, and that if there is continued noncompliance, we would look at revoking that privilege and not giving them sort of an out clause on taxi service. I do, on the topic of moratoriums, I do just want to say, you know, from the way the taxi industry looks at it is every time one of these new sort of business models comes up or there's some modification to the models, we always look at it from, you know, how could this be used to cheat the system and to actually poach taxi fares, not provide some new luxurious service. And so I do support moratoriums. My only hope is that they're either all at the council level or all at the board level, but that there's no mix of the way it's been in the past is taxis are essentially at the council level, which has meant we haven't had any permits in 11 years. And in fact, Broadway and radio haven't had permits in 20 years. And whereas the other types have been at a board level and they have been allowed to grow in many cases too large over the last couple of decades. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning. President Leonard, Commissioner Fish, Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Fish. My name is Tracy Marks. I manage the Portland Hilton. I interface with many of you on many different issues because I have a lot of pots on the stove in addition to representing the hotel industry. And I think that Jeff Hampton spoke very well for the hotel's Tri-County Lodgings position regarding the amendments. I also belong to Oregon Restaurant Association. I sit on the board of Portland Jazz. So I try to do a lot of things and, of course, Portland Utility Review Board. Do a lot of things to help our city. One of the things that has not been said here this morning is how important the town car industry is to the hospitality industry here in the city. And if you look at the hotels, restaurants, entertainment, okay, a whole host, okay, of businesses that depend on town cars, right? And Town Car's ability to take all of our customers, many who visit the city and want to have a wonderful experience, take them throughout the city, all right? And they present, all right, the city by and large very, very well. They are ambassadors to the city. I cannot say that that same case for many of the taxis that come to my hotel. In general, they are professional, clean and well-kept, able to speak English and converse and give directions and recommendations on places to visit. They know where they're going, unlike, again, many of the taxis that we encounter at my own hotel. And all of their cars are in top-class shape. I put my customers, my VIPs, who spend a lot of money here in the city, in these Town Cars, as the rest of the hotel and restaurant industry does, because we know they're going to have a great experience and they're going to have a fond memory of their visit to Portland and come back and spend another $300 a day. So we all need the income, and we should be thinking about protecting the Town Car industry and not trying to drive them out of business, and ask the visitors of Portland to have a substandard experience in another mode of transportation. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Sinclair Roda. I'm with Beaumont Transportation, owner and operator. And I want to oppose against the new amendment about the $2,500. That is just way too much. And also trying to find the hotel is just not right, because we are a vendor to the hotels, and the hotels get to choose their vendors, the same like any other vendor they have. Who provides the better service? That is their right. And it's our right to provide a better service to people who want it and to people who need it. And agreeing with this new amendment is not right. Thank you.
Thank you. Sue?
And the last two, Ryan Nahash again, Tomas Bernal.
Welcome, gentlemen. You each have 2 minutes. Please give your first and last names.
Hello. Thank you, Commission, for hearing from us. My name is Ryan Hashigan. I own and operate Portland Cascadia Pedicabs. We own the majority of pedicabs in downtown Portland, and all of our pedicabs are insured and always have been insured. Commissioner Saltzman's very important amendment will provide us with informed pedicab legislation. Nationally, municipalities and pedicab companies are looking at Portland right now to see what Bike City USA comes up with for pedicab precedent-setting regulation. Unfortunately, this current code does not address our safety concerns. It addresses the taxicab company's concerns. Section 1640.080 on page 9, section F and G, require map reading skills, relevant city code and administrative rules, and Portland area attractions tests to be completed immediately for the issuance of a driver's permit, but does not require driver safety or customer service training to be completed within 6 months. So that doesn't address our safety concerns, and I think that this amendment will really allow for that task force or that ad hoc committee to provide Revenue Bureau with informed concerns. I'd also like to address the competition concern. I'd like to say that we are not in competition with the taxis. We provide the two-block downtown unprofitable rides so that they can be freed up to drive to the airport or to the suburbs in the more profitable routes. Under this code, the private-for-hire board that is composed of these taxi cab companies could choose to cap or eliminate our green environmental industry. We just would like to have a conversation based on the needs of the city and environmental pedicab companies, not the needs of the taxi companies. So this very important amendment will allow for pedicab-appropriate legislation to be crafted with all the relevant stakeholders at the table. Thank you for your time.
Sorry, I just have 3 quick questions.
Sure.
Do you do background checks for your employees?
You bet. We don't do official ones, but we do reference checks on each driver.
Okay.
So I call previous employers, I call their parents, I call relevant references.
Do you require that your employees have a valid driver's license?
What we require is that they have a valid photo ID, and we have a safety training curriculum. About 60% of our drivers do not have driver's licenses. It's a different generation.
And What are the current limits that you have for commercial general liability and vehicle insurance?
$1 million insurance liability on each vehicle. And I've had that ever since this company started.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner.
Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Tomas Bernal. I am a driver for Rose Petals Pedicabs. I only have a couple of simple things to say. I just want to clarify, Mr. Fish, it seemed like you might have been uncertain as to whether or not we understand as drivers and follow the rules of the road. And I can certainly speak for my company. We all do. Now, I'm not sure about, I can't speak for every other person. I'm not their representative, but we all understand very well and respect the rules of the road that apply to bicycles, and in this case, tricycles. The other thing that I'd like to say is it's regarding our own safety. Now, first of all, I'd like to say that I really appreciate Mr. Saltzman's amendment to try to, you know, produce some appropriate legislation regarding pedicabs. But we also need some guarantees for our own safety when it comes to how we deal with, how we interact with the other transportation, private for hire transportation modes on the street. Now, Butch Miller, suggested that, you know, that he gets a lot of phone calls from his drivers regarding us being a nuisance to them, essentially, for quote-unquote competing with them. But what he didn't mention to you is that we constantly get harassment from various drivers, and I could give you specific drivers. I'm not going to right now, but we constantly get harassment. One driver from my own company was twice in one evening attacked by a driver from a taxi cab company with his taxi cab and said that he was going to get him. Now, there's been no reason for that, no excuse, and I'm not sure that anything's been done because I've seen that same taxi cab out on the road still. Now, we're talking about an attempt on someone's life, essentially, with the taxi cab because of a feeling of being better. I'm not sure what it is, but I feel like a lot of times I'm not safe on the road because we have no protection. There's no enforcement of the taxi cabs to ensure that I and my passengers' lives are safe.
Thank you.
Sir, if I could just clarify, I didn't mean to imply that any particular pedicab driver didn't understand the rules of the road. I simply was alluding to the fact that we have a licensing system in the state which ensures that people understand the rules, like my 16-year-old daughter, that have a whole series of stages of education, mentoring, different stages of licenses and the kind. And so that's one of the ways the city has an assurance that people actually are current in their understanding of rules of the road. And my observation, for what it's worth, is that both cyclists and automobile drivers in the city increasingly don't fully understand the rules of the road. And I say that as a pedestrian and as a cyclist and as a driver. There are a lot of people who just simply don't follow the rules. And I'm not carving out, I'm not pointing the finger at any particular party here. I just think that we're getting a little lax on the rule. And the thing that concerns me most is that particularly when car drivers don't follow the rules, the people most at risk are people on bicycles, pedicabs, and pedestrians.
As commercial vehicles, we take exceptional care to follow those rules.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, Sue, I will have a couple of – we're done? Okay. Well, I will have a couple questions, so you and Shane might want to come up. Go ahead. Did you have a question? I was going to try to dispense of our – we have a motion on the floor that I believe there's some consensus to change and amend.
Is that the pedicab one or the
fee? Well, we have one motion that has the fee and the pedicab one. My recommendation would be we withdraw that motion and then move the language that I read back to you relative to the pedicab.
Okay. Well, I still want to pursue the First Amendment, but I'm fine with dispensing of the Second Amendment. With your modifications.
So how would you like to do that? If you want to separate them? Do you want to separate?
Yeah, they were intended to be separate. I apologize.
Okay, let's just withdraw the motion, then why don't you make your motion again?
Good. I think that's a great way to go. So my first motion, after again listening to the testimony and about on-demand contracts and the fees associated with them. You know, as I said originally, I think the $2,500 per vehicle plus $1,000 for each additional is just too much. We heard testimony, I think, that supports that. I would propose that we establish it $1,000 for the first vehicle and $250 for each additional vehicle. And Sue clarified there's no sub-leasing allowed, so I think this is a fair and reasonable fee. I think Gary Coe, whole point about the Small Business Bill of Rights is a good one, and I think this honors that.
So I will second it for purposes of discussion.
Okay, so that's my First Amendment.
Well, under discussion, I don't support the amendment. I mean, I think we need to be clear here that the origin of these various kinds of transportation for hire entities evolves over time, and what the city has done, what the taxi industry is recognized that it's a vital part of our internal transportation system that happens to be in the private sector. So to that end, the city regulates the number of cabs that are allowed on the street, for an example. And the purpose of that is to make sure you don't have so many cabs that you have so many people out there driving that there's no way for them to make a living, and then the industry collapses on itself and the city loses the industry. This isn't unique to Portland. This is an approach taken by major cities throughout the United States to make sure we protect that industry. It's interesting to me to hear some of the comments of the limiting services about, why are the cab companies afraid of competition? The point is that they are not supposed to compete with the cab industry. Those services are supposed to be for transportation services that are different from cab services. And some folks like Tracy Marks identified what some of those are, and I agree with that. But in terms of going to the airport, in terms of being at a hotel downtown and getting a ride to a restaurant, they are not supposed to compete with those bread-and-butter cab issues. having said that I can't support your amendment, although I appreciate the motive behind it, I do think, again, Tracy Marks made an observation that reminded me that when the Bureau of Licenses was transferred from me under Mayor Potter, we were in the middle of working on, with the Bureau of Licenses, regulations for qualifications for cab drivers, because some of what Tracy criticized here is not just him criticizing it. It is a common criticism one hears. And in my effort to help protect that industry, I was going to begin working on, with the board and the Bureau of Licenses, minimum standards for drivers, which includes the capacity to speak English, to pass a geography test so that when somebody gets in the cab, they know where they're going, and customer service and those kinds of things. That has to happen. I mean, I think out of this discussion, we need to be clear what the Bureau of Licenses and the industry that we have to have that, because Tracy's observations are clear. Having said that, I think it would be very damaging to the industry for your amendment to pass for the taxi industry.
Well, again, my amendment, does not. I mean, these regulations, as put forward to us by the Revenue Bureau and the Private for Hire Committee, are establishing a new on-demand contractual arrangement for limos and town cars. And I'm just saying, if we're going to allow it, we shouldn't set it up in such a way that it's designed to be unaffordable or punitive. And that's why I think. And if you look at the fees that we charge cabs and other things, a $2,500 fee is way out of line with what we're charging everybody else for fees for permits, and that's why I think $1,000 per vehicle, first vehicle, $250 for each vehicle is just a more reasonable fee if we're sincere about opening this new avenue. If we're not, then keep it high.
I'm comfortable with the recommendation from the staff. Having looked at this, I could go with $1,000 and then $1,000, but $250 for an additional cab, that's for additional town car, that you could make that back in the first week of the year with 50, five rides, $50 to the airport. That doesn't seem like a particularly big disincentive. And also, we have to recognize that our taxi cabs provide service no matter what, no matter where, 24/7, 365. And that's part of the reason that they deserve their fair share of the more lucrative rides to the airport. And so I can't support your amendment at those levels because it doesn't seem to match the intent of what this entire program is trying to do.
Take this to a vote,
yes,
Mr. President.
Sue?
Fish.
I very much appreciate the discussion And as I indicated, and I've listened carefully to the testimony, appreciate that people took the time on a second hearing date to come in and share their views. I'm comfortable with the framework for on-demand that's been recommended by Sue and her team. If it needs to be modified or tweaked at some point in the future, I have no doubt she'll come back to us. And if this arrangement does create significant barriers and result in businesses either going out of business or a significant market impact, I know that you'll report back to us on that as well so that we can monitor this. Seems to me to be an appropriate balancing act, and I strongly support Commissioner Leonard's original amendment and then this as the sort of companion piece. Aye.
Ben, did you have an observation?
This is a vote on the motion.
Yes.
Not on the final.
Correct.
Correct.
Okay. Just on the motion. On the segregated motion, just dealing with the.
I'm sorry. So yes. I thank you. Thank you. I made a joke the other day that I turned 50 recently and my son turned 5. I got my AARP card. He got his Children's Museum card. I need to be a little more attentive. With respect to the motion of my friend Dan Saltzman, I vote no.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
No.
Fritz.
I do respect the intent, and I think it's been a very healthy discussion, and also that there's been a lot of work done on this for many years. So I'm comfortable with the staff recommendation. No.
Motion fails. So do you want me to read the?
Yes.
Or do you have the language?
Why don't you go ahead and?
And I have. You don't need to write this down. I've written it down, so you can.
again, this is for the pedicab ad hoc committee.
So number two of Commissioner Saltzman's handout. Strike the words that are underlined, compromised of, and insert the words an ad hoc committee, which is current language, and the new language will be shall include the following representatives, I'll try that again. Not following my own notes well. An ad hoc committee that is representative of the private for hire transportation community at large, but shall include the following representatives, and then it's Commissioner Saltzman's original language.
So did you mean at least the following representatives? You don't mean to limit it to those? Or do
no,
you
shall an ad hoc committee that is representing the private for hire community at large, but shall include, which would mean there could be more,
okay,
the following representatives. You need to second your motion.
Was there a second?
Oh, okay. Second. I thought that was like a friendly amendment. I thought I was excited. Okay.
Discussion.
Ann and I are both a little bit removed from the action today.
Discussion. Okay. For the discussion? If not, Sue, call the roll.
Fish.
I've learned a lot about the pedicab industry through this process, and clearly there needs to be some careful thought about how we regulate. It would not be my intention to regulate so as to put the industry out of business. I think it is. I think it has become an important part of our signature green, sustainable city brand. And my main concern, as you go forward with this process, is for the safety of people that access this unique form of transportation. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I do believe this approach will. Give the pedicab industry and others with interest the opportunity to look at some of the unique aspects of this growing industry and how it does differ from motorized transportation. And I think there are some very interesting issues. I think some of the things in the code just don't plain out shouldn't be applying to pedicabs, don't make sense. So this ad hoc committee will look at those issues, make recommendations. And ultimately, as I said earlier when I introduced this amendment, those recommendations could lead to modifications of the current code or the establishment of a separate code chapter for pedicabs. So I think this will be a good process. And as you know, my office will certainly want to be kept apprised of this. Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
This is a very helpful clarification and good work by staff and by all sides. Everybody seems very respectful of each other, and this has been a very good process, including for pedicabs. Aye.
So the amendment passes. It's incorporated into the original report.
We'll be considering that next week. But I don't know if council has any other questions or observations. I have a couple. Go ahead.
I have a question following up on Ms. Miles' request for the rules for moratoria being the same for all types of transportation. And it seems to me that under 4200, the limited passenger transportation number of vehicles allowed, it authorizes a future moratorium by administrative rule. And I'm okay with that as long as there would be an understanding that if that were to happen, there would be a concurrent addition of an appeal like the one for taxi cabs that would come to City Council. Or is there already something in here that would require an appeal if there's a cap established or allow for an appeal?
There's not an appeal process for the council if the moratorium affects sedans or potentially limos or pedicabs. The only time council gets involved would be for the taxi cabs. So and that's current code language as well. That's not something that we didn't do differently. We just kind of kept that as is.
I think Ms. Miles' point is accurate, is a good one, though, that whatever the rules are, they should be the same for both. So if at some point in the future there's an administrative rule that puts a cap on, at the same time there should bring back an amendment to council with regulations to allow for an appeal for that. Is that okay with you, Director Klobertanz?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you.
I agree with that, too. That's a good point.
Anything further? The John Case from Classic Chauffeur actually recommended there be a number of limos allowed above which they wouldn't be allowed, much like taxis. It's intriguing. I don't expect you to react to that today, but
thank you.
I would be interested in your more thoughtful reaction after you discuss this amongst yourself and the industry, if that makes any sense, if the same kind of reasoning would apply to that industry as does the cab industry.
Do you want me to respond now?
You can respond now, that'd be great.
Well, I personally don't think that this is personal opinion. I don't think there would ever be a need for a moratorium on limousines.
I'm talking about not a moratorium, but licensing with limits. Is that the same?
To me, that sounds like a moratorium. I think it's unfair to the future companies that may want to grow. I think that's protection too much for the current ones. But as Mr. Case says, and I agree with him, limousine service is not it's not like taxi cab service. It's not a fundamental part of our infrastructure for transportation. And therefore, I just don't think there should be caps on it personally.
Okay. That's helpful to hear that. You don't need to spend a lot of time.
The other reaction, because we've had this discussion with Mr. Case, is in my mind, this talks about vehicle permitting. So I may have a service company that has two pedicabs, four taxis, three sedans, and a limo. I may call myself Susie's Limousines, but those vehicles are not limousines. And I think one of the ongoing discussions we're having is just because you're a limousine company and that's how you market yourself does not mean that some of your sedans might need to be permitted as town cars. And so that's a
it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck.
So we're having those discussions and people think about it very differently. So that's an ongoing work.
Okay. And the other thing that I mentioned in the prior vote was the observation that Tracy Marks made, which I appreciate him saying out loud, because when I was responsible for this was an area where we're just gearing up to tackle. And I'd be interested to first have any reaction if you've been working on some kinds of minimum standards, but if not, what you think of having that as part of a work plan.
Commissioner Leonard, that's one of the key components of this code rewrite is the standards. If you look at driver requirements, it includes customer service, driver safety training, knowledge of relevant attractions, map reading skills, geographical skills. That was a big component to the code that it's not there currently. So I agree with you.
We would require some objective standard by which they satisfied some minimum level of competency in those areas before we'd allow them to drive.
To get a driver's permit, that's correct. And I know that Mr. Hashigan stated that he was concerned that this code didn't go far enough for their safety concerns, and he mentioned the fact that there's a six-month window that you have to get your driver safety training and your customer service training. And the reason we did a six-month window was to help them because those are going to be independent classes. And if someone comes forward and needs a driver's permit now, but the class at PCC is not for 2 months, we didn't want to prohibit them from getting a driver's permit for that reason. So the six-month window that he mentioned is a benefit to the driver so they can schedule these classes because the city's not going to, probably not going to be the one administering the driver safety and the customer service training.
I can't resist saying that just uniformly in my experience, I've encountered drivers who are knowledgeable about the city, courteous, and follow the rules. And I will contrast that with a trip my daughter and I took to Los Angeles recently, where we got into a cab with a driver who did not speak English and did not know the city, which in Los Angeles is a real problem because I certainly didn't know it. So he handed my daughter a GPS device and had her program in where we were going, which then guided him in his native language, which I thought was interesting.
But I hope the industry embraces this notion because I think, again, I appreciate Tracy's candor. Not all hoteliers would be as candid here about that dynamic because I actually think that will help them relieve the pressure that exists for hotels to use other forms of transportation besides taxis if we adequately address that certification need and competency training. Because it was a common complaint that I heard.
Mm-hmm.
Back then. So, any other comments, observations? Great. This passes to second reading next Wednesday. Thank you. Back to the regular agenda. Sue, could you read item 615?
Authorize the director of the Bureau of Environmental Services to execute an agreement with Union Pacific Railroad Company, including indemnification from city to Union Pacific Railroad as part of the Portsmouth Forest Main Segment 2 project.
Mr. Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is a non-controversial agreement with Union Pacific so that work can begin on the Portsmouth Forest Main project, another vital piece of the Big Pipe project. I urge immediate approval.
Thank you. Anybody signed up to testify?
I did not have a sheet out.
Great. Sue, please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Passes. Item 616.
Apply for a $3,801,887 grant from the U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance Recovery Act, Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Program grant to prevent or reduce crime and violence.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Mark Kruger, Captain, Police Bureau.
Veronica Nordine, Grants Management Analyst, Portland Police Bureau.
This grant is, again, a stimulus recovery grant through the Byrne Memorial grant for a total of $3.8 million. The provisions of the grant require, in this case, a disparate certification of funds in that the county provides more than 50% of the prosecution and incarceration services in this county. And so the money must be split, the total $3.8 million must be split between the city and the county. So of the total funds in this grant, 1.7 approximately will come to the city of Portland, $1.7 million. $1.5 million to Multnomah County, $441,000 to the city of Gresham, $13,000 to the city of Fairview, and $21,000 to the city of Troutdale. And all those funds will pass through the city of Portland to those subgrantees.
Great. Thank you. Any questions?
You might want to just touch upon what we intend to use our portion of the grant money for.
For the city of Portland, there will be three areas that will be funded with the monies from for the city. The first portion will fund six gang outreach workers for a period of 36 months. The second portion of the funds will fund two BTS management analysts that will work on the PPDS upgrade system. And the third portion will be used to fund the East Precinct Prostitution Enforcement Mission for a period of 2 years.
Excellent. Very nice. Thank you. Further questions, comments? Anybody signed up to testify?
I did not have a sheet out.
If anybody wanted to testify. If not, please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Great work. Thank you. Aye.
Passes. Thank you. Item 617.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Multnomah County and the cities of Fairview, Gresham, Troutdale for the application for and use of funds from the Recovery Act, Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Assistance Formula Program grant for law enforcement prosecution, prevention, education, and technology programs.
Great.
And again, my name is Captain Mark Kruger, Portland Police Bureau. The purpose of this intergovernmental agreement is simply to identify the administration of the grant funds and the reporting requirements of the subgrantees to the City of Portland so that we may conduct our reporting to the federal government on the application of the grant.
Thanks. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Anybody signed up to testify?
No.
Anybody want to testify? If not, Sue, please call the roll.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Great. Thank you. Sue, could you read items 618 and 619 together?
Authorize a grant of $10,450 to Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods from the Fund for Accessible Neighborhoods for printing and district-wide mailing of a multilingual postcard and poster advertising neighborhood cleanups. And 619 is authorized grant of $5,000 to East Portland Neighbors from the Fund for Accessible Neighborhoods for a multicultural neighborhood festival, the East Portland Exposition.
Mr. Fritz.
So I had these on the regular agenda to publicize some of the good work that's been done with relatively small amounts of money within the neighborhood system. For many years, community members, especially low-income residents, disabled people, and new Americans have struggled with barriers that prevent them from getting involved in neighborhood association activities. Some of the barriers that were reported included language, interpretation, translation, childcare, Americans with Disabilities Act, accessibility issues, and transportation. The funds for accessible neighborhoods have helped neighborhood associations to address some of these barriers and open up more opportunities for the disenfranchised to participate in neighborhood activities. According to our Office of Neighborhood Involvement, Public Involvement staff, the following are some of the concrete ways that community members have benefited from these funds. In Southwest neighborhoods of Sweeney, we provided accessible porta potties for neighborhood night out events to make the events more accessible for elders. In Central Northeast neighbors, we translated flyers for various community events into Spanish, Russian, and Vietnamese. In North Portland neighborhood services, they provided interpretation for contentious community meetings, and they used funds to support relationship building between Frente Commune and the neighborhood association. And Arbor Lodge neighborhood association purchased materials to help neighborhood associations engage seniors. Northeast Coalition of Neighbors translated its brochure into Somali and Spanish and is working with a child care organization to identify certified child care providers. And it's working. Over the last 5 years, a 29% increase in monthly participation in neighborhood association meetings. We're averaging nearly 35,000 people per year involved in neighborhood associations. Been a 54% increase in the number of print and e-newsletters distributed to community members, over 1 million newsletters per year, over 100,000 per month. We've had a 30% increase in the leveraged value of volunteer hours from participation. The number right now is over $1 million, and I know that Commissioner Fish's number for parks is over $3 million, so we are committed to counting our numbers even better because I'm sure that we have even more than that number suggests. We've increased the number of partnerships. In last year, we had 4,654 partnerships with other community organizations between that and the 95 neighborhood associations. And we distributed 41% of our small grants to underrepresented organizations, with a total number of dollars leveraged from about less than $200,000 to nearly $1 million. And finally, we are still working on neighborhood association cleanups, and the average number of volunteers that help with neighborhood cleanups is 32 people who volunteer to schlep garbage and haul materials, often from seniors and other folks in the community who can't get to the cleanup. We have people who go out and help get that stuff cleaned up. So there's a tremendous amount of volunteer activity going on. Tomorrow we have the graffiti summit that we'll be looking at further ways to improve and involve a lot more people even more. But for right now, I'd like to invite up Paul Leisner from our neighborhood involvement office and also Mark White from our Powellhurst-Gilbert Neighborhood Association to just tell us a couple of things about what this money has done.
Well, thank you very much
for considering these ordinances. I'm Paul Leisner. I'm the Neighborhood Program Coordinator for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. Mark White is the person heading up the East Portland Exposition. So I'm going to be very brief and then let Mark talk about his project. But I think, as Commissioner Fritz said, this money has given a wonderful opportunity to the neighborhoods to really start to explore how do you start to break through these barriers and get more people involved. And I think some of the